Everyone, I'm Holly, my alcoholic, and I hope I'm quite loud, so I hope I hear a little bit of a high pitch. Is that okay for everyone? Okay. That's okay. No problem. I'm glad I'm not in charge of that. I don't know how to do it, so it's really good someone else is doing it. I just like to have my phone up here, so it's on silent. Don't worry. Just so I can continuously kind of look at the time and not get confused and not trail off into blabber. And so my sobriety date is July 20th of 2007. I have a sponsor. I have a home group. My home group is in Bethesda. It's called Women Living Sober. It's a Thursday night meeting. If you're ever around and your lady identifies lady, please come see us. Love it. We read Living Sober, a chapter every week. And we just share on it, and it's awesome. It's just like we set all the chairs up in a circle. It's a small meeting, and it's very kind of you're able to get vulnerable there and share your truth. And it's just nice to be in a group of people that really understand. And I do find every AA meeting mostly to be that way. No matter who's sharing, I can at least relate to when they say, "I'm so and so, and I'm an alcoholic." I've had to over time. Cause I've had my judgments and whatnot of like whoever's sharing or speaking, or I've been in the Bethesda area for a long time. And so I hear a lot of the same people, and I've had to just get ways to keep looking for how to connect with people and not need something novel, not need something new. Cause alcoholism is same old for me. I'm just going to get drunk again if I don't have principle, same thing. So but I really do enjoy in every AA meeting that I can relate to, at least I'm an alcoholic and I feel better. And it's more than a feeling, but the only word I have is feeling of I belong here. It's a sense of belonging. I guess the big book does say it best, a sense of belonging. I never had that before. I grew up in Cheverly, Maryland. That's in Hyattsville, like right outside DC, I think on the east side, and had a nice little family, had one brother. Both parents, had a cat, went to school, was able to walk to a little town school. Cheverly is like an actual town. So it's a little and kind of insular, but it was nice. I liked it. I had a lot of good times and a lot of good memories, and I didn't really have anything wrong on the outside. We were a little bit poor, but that it didn't make an impact, if you know what I mean. I always had food. I played sports. I went to school. We were good. I didn't get a canoe for Christmas, as one of the rich kids did, I noticed, but I still remember. But that was really the only thing I like noticed. My brother has special needs, and so that was something different, and it's not as accepted. It wasn't as accepted back then as it is now. I'm 37, so I guess that was when I was little, I guess 5 to 7, I don't know how long ago that was. But and like there's much more known about autism and stuff now. He's on the spectrum, and so that was different, but once again, not terrible, you know? And so I'm telling you that just to give you, because I know some people actually do have stories and backgrounds where like actually bad things happened, like objectively not okay. And I did not have any of that. And even though I had the greatest life a little young person could have, I was like always angry and upset. And I never felt like a part of anywhere. Really loved my brother, always wanted to play with him, and he did not want to play with his little sister. And so there was that. But I like loved my mom and dad. I had little friends. I excelled at school. Swimming was my sport, so I excelled at swimming. And all of that's through hard work. I did not, like, my brother is smart to the point that he can read something once, and that's kind of it. He's like now an engineer or something. You know what I mean? I'm like, that's great. You know, I have to reread it like 85 times. So really hard work, excelled at school, really hard work, excelled at swimming, practice, you know? And it never made sense to me why I didn't feel that great. It really, because I have been an analyzing person for as long as I can remember. So I started analyzing at a young age, like myself, of like, what's the problem? You know, like, do I want to play another sport or something? Or do I want to do more art? Or am I actually that mad about getting a B versus an A? And it's like, there was never an identifier. There's nothing wrong. And it confused me for years and years. And so I just thought at one point when I became a teenager, I was like, oh, this is just teenage angst. Like, makes perfect sense. I've heard a lot about it. You just don't feel good when you're a teenager, at least some people or maybe many people. I don't need to think about it. It's okay. It's going to pass. And then as I progressed in teenage years, it just never passed. And I got more and more like morbidly depressed and anxious, but I still excelled at school and swimming. I was going for scholarships and all that stuff. And it maddened me even more when I was in high school. I was in like a military prep school, wanted to go into the military. And I was on that route. It was really good. I had done well as a young kid. And my parents supported me. I had supportive adults elsewhere, had nice friends. There was always some emotional thing off though, and it maddened me as I learned more and more about just being human, growing up, what life is, all that. And I was like, there's nothing wrong. Like 9/11 had happened. I'm like, you didn't lose someone. There's nothing wrong. Like you weren't on the plane. Many other things, you just turn on the news, right? And you're like, that's not me. Like, so I had no idea what the issue was. I was also too prideful to actually even dabble in that I might have like a mental health issue. I was like, absolutely not. Like I'm gonna have a secret job in the government. I don't have a mental health issue. You know what I mean? Like that's what I was going for. Military leading into a Russian spy. And so like that was my dream, literally. And so because I'm like half Russian and I was like, I got this, you know what I mean? But that dream did not come true, let me tell you. But my life got way better in a different way. But I was very arrogant, and I don't know where it came from. We could point to some stuff in my childhood, but honestly, at the end of the day, everyone was doing the best they could with what they had. My parents did a great job. That's like the long and the short of it. My dad came from a special, like a especially poor, and they got evicted all the time and everything. And his parents were alcoholics. And he is not, and he like made his way out of that type of lifestyle, and he has lived a great life, and he raised us, and he didn't do one thing to us that he told me his parents did him, and so, and my mom too, she moved from a different location in the country. She wanted to be closer to DC, to get. She said she wanted to raise kids in like a diverse area because she was not raised there, and so she's doing something like she did for us what wasn't done for her, so. They did a fantastic job. We did have kind of a mentality of like emotions are not tolerated, or maybe emotions aren't real in a way. Like if you're mad, be grateful you live in America. So I'm not sure what you're mad about. Now that always confused me as a young kid. I didn't know enough. So I was just like, okay. You know what I mean? When I was told that, I was like, great, I'm grateful. I think my parents' relationship wasn't super great. And so they had issues. So they weren't the best role models at like a romantic relationship, but they were excellent people and parents. So can't really blame much. You know what I'm saying? That sounds regular, sounds common, especially from being an AA and listening and asking many questions and trying to remain open-minded as I've been taught to do. It sounds common. And so there wasn't anything extreme. And why am I telling you guys this? Sometimes I lose my train of thought. I'm currently not drinking as much coffee. And so my focus ability has gone down, which is quite sad. But maybe it'll come back up one day if when I'm used to the lack of caffeine. Oh, the mental health thing. Yeah, so there was no possibility. My mom did. She had good intuition. She sent me to a therapist, and I didn't tell the therapist the truth. What can they do? I could have talked to a religious person. I was really raised in a religion. They were very nice. Could have talked to a teacher, could talk to friends. I could have talked to friends' parents. I could have talked to my mom. She's cool. Nope. There was something innate in me that can't be blamed that I was like, I will hide this. This is mine. Because I didn't want to look weird or bad or be a sad person. I was like, that doesn't exist. This is teenage angst. It'll go away. Now, before teenage angst had its like, opening to go away, I found drinking. And I didn't mean to get drunk. I got drunk at 17, drank till I was 21, so very short, but brutal. And I would not have stopped if it wasn't brutal. I needed to be completely almost dead, and we'll get there, like physically dead in order to stop because there was no stopping. So I'm lucky that I stopped, but found drinking. I was just sitting at the dinner table with my dad. I'd had wine before, but like not a lot, not even to get buzzed. And I just had three glasses of wine that night instead of two. That was the most I'd ever had because he let me. I was a very good child, very good up until literally that night. And so that night just changed everything. And I became a very bad, what is it called? A citizen, very bad. And so definitely no military in my future. You know, that was crushed. But I hated my dad at the moment because there's nothing to blame. And I wasn't, and I, for my feelings. And so I blamed him. Easy target. I've heard this a million times at this point. I hate my dad. And it's like, what did he do? And it's like, nothing. You know? It's like, okay. So I learned in sobriety that he's actually awesome. And I just hated him because it was just something to put it on instead of admit that I have a problem and like maybe go seek help, maybe be responsible for myself. It's like, it's not me, it's definitely you. And that was false. Why I'm telling you that is because at three glasses of wine, I had the true feeling of love for my dad. It was true. I remember it to this day. I looked at him and I was like, man, he's awesome. Why am I so mad all the time at him? Like, he's so funny. He's so great. He works so hard to get where he is. It made me grateful. It made me love the one person I talked to my friend Lauren about pushing down the stairs. You know what I mean? Just to put it out there. We had talked about that because we were in our teenage angsty stuff about we hate our dads and they didn't do anything wrong, you know? And so, but I loved him. And even in that moment of like feeling drunk for the first time, that astounded me. And I was like, whoa, if something can make me actually love the one person I dislike the most, because I don't think I hated him. I know more of the definition of that word now, like it was real definition. I didn't hate him. I was just mad and I'm all messed up and not asking for help anywhere, not even a school counselor, not even a physician, you know? So you can't do anything with someone who's mad and upset if they're not going to take any suggestions ever or be honest with anybody besides their brain. So made me love him and I thought, hey, what will more do? And I didn't know what could be better than loving the person you dislike, but I went downstairs and I drank three beers like quickly, and then I got an AIM, if anyone remembers. And I messaged my best friend Allison at the time, and I was like, "Hey, I'm drunk for the first time. It's the best thing ever, literally I've ever experienced." And I had been quite successful in school and swimming. For a young person on paper, it's like there's literally nothing to be upset about. You should be happy. And I was like, this is the best feeling. Like, no trophy, no winning, no A, nothing compared to drunk, nothing. And she, all she, like what she said back was surprising. She said, are you alone? And I was like, no. And I was absolutely alone. My basement also looked like a dungeon. It was like, it's one of those little old houses in Cheverly. The basement never really got finished. There's a concrete floor and the walls are green cinder blocks. And so it looked like a little dungeon. And I was just down there drinking, you know, on the computer. And we still had AOL dial-up. And I lied. I said, no, of course not. I'm with my whole family. And I don't have like a whole family. I have six people in my family for real. We have no uncles, no cousins. That's it. You know, there's like some aunts. And so we're very little. So I just kind of lied, made up something. And then at some point, somewhere, I blacked out, wound up in my room. I remember crawling up the stairs to the second floor. I don't know how I got up the basement stairs because they were dangerous. They were those basement stairs, old. And so I got up them though. And I either wound up on the floor, woke up on the floor, or in my bed. I can't remember. Woke up on the floor a lot in a lot of places. So it's gotten, what is it, like mushy in there over time where I really woke up. But I had a hangover. And that was the worst pain I'd had, physical pain I'd had in my life yet, because I swam. So it's not something where you like break bones or have big, heavy collisions. You like often don't get concussions, things like that. You get more like internal issues, like joint problems. So I was like, oh my God, like, I'm sorry. How do people drink every day? This is horrible. I was like, I cannot drink ever again. This hangover is, and I actually said to myself, the people who drink every day are rock stars. Like, how do they do it? I was like, I can't handle the pain, you know? And I was like, I'll never drink again besides secret agencies that I want to be a part of. And the military is not going to care that I got drunk once, you know? And so that's what I said. I was like, it doesn't matter. No one's going to care. I'm going to tell them on the lie detectors. Yeah, I got drunk and this is what happened. No one's going to care. So I was never going to drink again. No big deal. And I would just want to point out that first night of drinking, I had the phenomenon of craving, because why would I want more? Why would I want more after it did the thing that probably I could get $1 trillion if I could make that into a pill. You like the person you dislike. God, wouldn't that be great? You know, if it just worked, if I could just do that for people's brains. But alcohol did that for me. And so why would I want more? That makes no sense. That did the impossible. And so, and then I wanted more. And then I blacked out and I got sick. And I also defended it. I lied about it and I drank alone. There's all these markers of a problem that happened the very first night I drank. And I was upset for most of my life. But so it was welcome. It was a welcome relief, that's for sure. And again, I know a lot, not everyone's upset for most of their life and then they're trying to be alcoholic. Not at all. Like tons and tons and tons of experiences out there. This is just mine, just turned out to be one of us. And it is in the bloodline because I'm Irish and Russian. Like, who would do that to me? Who, why would they procreate? It's always the question. But like they did, and this is what happened, you know. That's what I did. I defended it. I didn't defend it. I lied about it to protect it, different than defending. And I blacked out. And I know not everyone blacks out, but I was a massive blackout drinker, had a hangover. Then the next weekend, I actually just started drinking again. And it baffled me a little bit. This time was with my mom. This shows you how many friends I have at that time. And this time was with my mom. And she was with her friend Carla. There was just a bottle of something clear. I don't know, Carla liked vodka. And then there was some whiskey. No, it was scotch. And I sat down with them. And I even told them I was a good kid. I was like, no, I drank too much last weekend. And I got like a headache and stuff, which I really dulled that down, you know. And they're like, my mom. You know, she's gotten drunk twice in her life. That was her second time. And I think she smoked a cigarette once and took like a puff of weed. And so she's very, 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 I don't know what that word is, pure. You know what I mean? She's very pure. So she said, in all her pureness and sweetness, you know, scotch doesn't get you drunk. It's also brown liquor. Like dark liquor doesn't get you drunk. And I was like, really? You know, and she was like, yeah, no, like my uncles used to drink it all the time and they were fine. All of them were alcoholics. Like I found that out later. I was like, you're talking about Uncle Bill? Like, you know, like Uncle Bill like went down hard. You know what I mean? Like Uncle Bill had a hard time at the end, and he drank whiskey every day, but was cool, you know? So she was like, no, he was fine. And so I don't know what that was, but purity is what I call it. And I was like, oh, okay. So I had like a thing of scotch just like on ice and it tasted disgusting. I was like, God in heaven, like who drinks this? Like once again, drinkers, what is up with them? How do they do this? I mean, wine is delicious. Like I can just chug that. I don't know why people don't. To this day, I'm like, how do you not just put it down? Like from the bottle, it's so delicious, you know? But like liquor was like, this is so bad. And but I kept drinking it. If it was a juice drink that I didn't like I don't necessarily like pure grapefruit juice. It's just a little too sour. And so I put it down. I actually don't sip it again. Like for real. Maybe I'll get a water, get another drink, you know? But scotch tasted so bad, but I kept drinking it anyway. Like, why? That doesn't make sense. And so, of course, I blacked out that night and they carried me home. And it was funny. We fell on the grass. It was a small town. People knew, you know? And like, it was funny though. It wasn't a big deal because the three of us were not lunatics. I wasn't one yet. And so it was just funny and everyone brushed it off. I woke up the next morning with the same type of hangover, actually worse this time. And I was just like, what in the world? I thought the same thing. No one's going to care with my aspirations. It's going to be fine. I'm just not going to drink anymore. And that was the last time I said I'm not going to drink anymore. Because then the next weekend came and I actually just started drinking with like friends my age instead of my parents. And what was it called? It was like blue, sky blue. Sky blue vodka, those little things. And I thought that was delicious. So I was like, you can't even taste the vodka. And like, I really liked it and it was good. But it was so sugary. I learned a lot of facts throughout my drinking about how to try to control and enjoy it because I got sick. So I got sick all the time. And I was really trying to mitigate that and to skip that part. And the only way I did that was to get a very high tolerance. And become physically addicted to it. Because then I would detox instead of have a hangover. Different, but the detox has happened 5 times. So I could have a long period of not a lot of pain, technically, but at least not the hangover pain. But I did get hungover a lot in those in between periods of just becoming physically addicted again. Happened many times. But I just started drinking and just started living a life that I felt like I wanted, but what really happened. I looked back on it. I was baffled in the moment because I kept thinking, how am I gonna keep up with my pursuits? I already had to stop swimming because I got constant bursitis in both shoulders. It just takes you out. Can't swim anymore. And so any scholarship thing was off the table for that. So it was all academics at this point. And so I cheated my way through senior year because, again, no genius over here. So I needed to study and I wasn't studying anymore. So I cheated my way through, still got A's. I'm sure I got some B's in there. And I just don't remember which classes, but I know I did. And graduated with a great GPA. For cheating for last year, no one knew though. And I remember shaking, I think, the president of the school's hand at graduation and thinking to myself, I am never working this hard ever again because school was so awfully difficult, mixed with doing a sport at the same time, like very seriously. I was like, absolutely no. Like this was horrible. And there's a lot of pressure, there's just a lot of pressure sometimes to go to like a good school or be all you can be in a way. Is that the army thing anyway? Yeah. All right. Gotten drilled in there. You know what I mean? And so I think it was mostly internal pressure because that natural arrogance I have as well. Like just like I will succeed. And like that can be driven, which is a good characteristic within bounds, but it can mine just went wildly unhealthy of like I will be secretive. I will live through alcoholism. Like no one will know, and I will do whatever I want, and I will drink as much as I want at the same time. So still like that driven, like I control things thing. Didn't really understand that I controlled very little, if anything. So that whole year just became kind of bad, is the best way to say it. Any like any disturbed kid show you see, it's what I did, and I just started drugs at some point in there. And they are a part of my story. I won't talk much about them, but I just know that I did a lot of them. They aided in the downfall, and I'm glad that my downfall was quick, because I don't think I would have made it, but I'll tell you that as well. So I got into college, went to Chicago. What did I, what a, Loyola Chicago for one semester, almost got expelled. And that's because I was threatening somebody, like, whoops. And all that anger really, all that upsetness was really coming out wrong at this point. And this girl I was a roommate with, she just, didn't want to be my roommate anymore because apparently I was crazy. And I like came in really drunk one night. Of course, I don't remember. I was either soaking wet then, and we don't know how, or I became soaking wet. We still don't know what happened there. But in the morning, I was like, why am I drenched? I'm sorry. I know we all have the stories of like, it's a little funny. And maybe it's not funny to those who experienced it outside of us, but I know it says in the big book somewhere we can laugh at tragedy. Some of my stories are like, oh, like what happened? Like, where were you? Pretty sure a cop took me home that night, which I'm really grateful for because I was not in a good part of Chicago. Lincoln Park is better now, but it wasn't super, I don't even, 2004 was that. And I was just wandering around doing stuff. Who knows what I was wearing? I like to wear especially interesting things when I was drinking and going to bars. I liked it. I thought I looked good. But like it was what is it? Like laying myself open, kind of being vulnerable to like attack of certain sorts, right? And like if you black out, what am I gonna do? I don't know, jujitsu. And so like what am I gonna do? Even if I did and I'm blackout drunk, I'm going, nah. You know what I mean? Like, how am I going to win a fight? And so that was that. Somebody took me home that night, and I always think of them as a like an angel, a angel in human form or human angel, whatever. And because I don't know what happened, and it was quite bad, whatever it was. And so, yeah, she just didn't want me to live with her anymore because, like, apparently I was on the floor that night, like rocking back and forth. She literally said I looked like the Exorcist girl because my makeup was like, whoosh, and like everything was everywhere. And she said I looked gray, and I was like, that's awesome. Like, I wonder what I wish you got a picture, Like, but that's in the sickness. I didn't know how sick I was, honestly. But she hated me and got me kicked out of my dorm. They were kind enough, though, to put me in a dorm. Just alone in my own room. They wouldn't give me a roommate, which was so sad. They like didn't trust me I have a roommate anymore. And now I obviously see they were correct, but I was really mad. So I started threatening that girl and almost got expelled. And I'd taken up cocaine in that semester anyway. And so I stayed home the next semester. So instead of getting expelled, they welcomed me staying home and not returning. I just stayed home the next semester because I knew I was like already imploding was 19, I guess, because that was 18. So then we come up to 19, and that was like a year and a half into drinking, almost two. And I had just gotten up to drinking a lot of Jim Beam, like one of those big jugs. Like I always had it. I always had one because I just could not have one of the little ones, like a square. I guess it's not little, but it's the square one, the rectangle one. And would fill it with the big one and take this one out. And but I'd always have the big one in my trunk because what if I drank all of that? Like I clearly need more. Like I can never stop. And so I always had Jim Beam on me. And if for some reason I didn't, I would drink anything, but definitely preferred something quicker. So definitely preferred any sort of liquor. Because I don't have then I was skinny and I didn't have a I was muscular because of swimming, but didn't have like my body was not prepared for alcoholism. You know what I mean? It was not prepared for the beating that toxins do to us. So always had it, or drank 40s because they were cheap. They were 250. I was always surprised why more people didn't drink 40s. And then I like at some point found out on Alcoholics Anonymous that like, yeah, because there aren't that many alcoholics out there. Okay. Probably like alcoholics, I'm sure love 40s, you know, but not everyone just chugs them. And I guess that's all they're for. Like they taste horrible, right? They must be for us, but that's my opinion. I stayed home and got a job, tried to go to Maryland, College Park, because that's where I was living. Still living in that Hyattsville house, and got a job and just kept drinking. And then found me a fiance, and that was perfect. He drank, what is it? What's Jack? What's his last name? Jack.
Daniels.
Thank you. Jack Daniels. Jack Daniels, Black Label? Okay, thank you. That's what he drank. And I drank Jim Beam. And we just thought that we were the perfect match. And he was an alcoholic like me. And so we would just chug our whiskey together in love under the stars. And it was nice for like a couple months. And then we both became kind of abusive towards each other verbally. And then eventually, 2.5 years later, he wound up hitting me. And it's not like, of course, I don't control someone's actions, right? I don't say, here you go, hit me, right? But it's not like I was doing anything proper or nice to him. You know, I absolutely was still emotionally abusing him. And so I always want to make that clear. I did leave at that point because he was very, very strong and very scary at that point. And so I knew that he could kill me with his hands. And I was like, I gotta get out of here. You know, like I don't actually want to die, especially this way. And so I did leave, and that was heartbreaking. Funny enough, as bad as it went, it was still insanely heartbreaking, and I really couldn't get over it. And then my parents had split up 2 years before, and I couldn't get over that for some reason either. And I started to analyze again, and I was like, people get over breakups all the time around the world for millennia, and people, their parents break up constantly. So why am I just out here not able to deal? So I was drinking heavily, heavily, heavily. I'd already detoxed a bunch, had a cocaine overdose in there, by the way, and like, I had a cocaine overdose and one other overdose just because I mixed too many things, lived through them, whatever. Never went to hospitals because arrogance and stupidity as well. I don't know if it's stupidity or naivety, but could be both. I just didn't want to go because I don't want it to. You go to a hospital, it's recorded, you know, they look at your license. And I was like, this can't happen. So, and by that time, by the time that we broke up, I'd already detoxed four times and I did that on my own. With those 2 gallon things of Gatorade, I was like, absolutely can do this. Like I've seen it on TV. And so I just get some Gatorade and got multivitamins. I mean, I took so many vitamins and drank so much Gatorade. And I got through all of them. They were painful. It was only the last one, the fifth one, which was March of 2007, where I like saw things. Not full on hallucinations like shrooms. Those were interesting and fun, but like not full on, but it was more like black blips that was happening everywhere. And I knew what was going on. It was like a detox. And I also got paranoia, like the trees were going to fall on me, but there was no wind. You know what I mean? There's no rain. So I was just like, I think I'm insane. And then I kind of talked myself into like, no, it's just a detox. It'll go away. And I mean, it did, but my mind never went back. My mind just never. I consider myself now, then, with all the training I have up to today, I was a danger to myself and possibly others. What if I was driving and then had a psychotic break? You know, because I was at that stage. I don't believe it happened, But you know what, guys? I still have never asked the doctor about that time. To this day, I'm just like, I'm fine. I lived is all good. You know, I left with that in the past. But there, I was mentally so off that I absolutely should have sought help. But I'll tell you, in my fifth detox, I lived in College Park, Maryland, which I think it's still the same. It's just, it can be a little dangerous at times. And so I lived on a ground floor apartment, and there was a red button on the wall. And you press the red button and the cops come. Like, you don't even need to call. It's a button. And I looked at the button during my fifth detox, and my heart was going really fast and really slow. And I was like, probably gonna have a heart attack. Like, this is sad that it's the end. And I looked at the button and I was like, I could just get help right now. I don't even need to talk to somebody. And I looked at it and I pondered for just a few seconds, and I made a conscious decision. It's like, I'd rather have my parents find me dead on the floor than have anybody know what's going on. And so that actually made my mind blank for just a rare moment. And it made me like solemn. And I was like, it's come to this, you know, and I knew the end was near, like the real end. And I didn't want it to be the end. I knew what I had ruined for my life already. I knew, like, everything I talked about in the beginning, none of that is achievable after you're delinquent. You know what I mean? They're just like, no, thank you. They're like, you cannot be a spy. Thank you very much, ma'am. But like, your liability. And so all of that's destroyed. And that also, I was pained about that, knew it was my fault as well. And you know how the truth comes to you when you're alone and you're solemn? And it just all came, and I was like, yeah, I've lived my life as best I can, and I have been beat. And I think I'm gonna go. I think I'm gonna go. And so I didn't have a heart attack that night, and I'm really grateful for that. I say thank you to sports for that one, because I practiced ridiculously hard. And it's always, I guess that type of what is it called? Just training, physical training has always been helpful for my body. And so I do believe I still had muscle then, and I have no idea how. I really just think it was all training, all the years. It takes a long time, I guess, for muscle to go back down. But I'm just grateful that I get to be here, because during the cocaine overdose, I strained my heart. That's what the doctor said the next day, because I did go to the doctor, but I was on my own insurance that day. The previous day, I was on my dad's insurance, so I only went if it was on mine. And he said, "You can never do coke again, obviously." Like, duh. And he said, "I really don't know why." He said, "After looking at your heart, you have a very large, dense heart for a 19-year-old." And I was like, "Well, I swam competitively." And he was like, "That's what did it." And he was like, "If you had a regular 19-year-old girl's heart, like, you had a severe OD on cocaine, like, you wouldn't be here." And I was like, "Okay." And I still drank for 2 years. Didn't do cocaine again, except for one nummy. I did do that, but I kept drinking, and drinking was always the love of my life. And I'm only mentioning the drugs. I hope it's not offensive to anybody, because it is part of it, and it's part of the physical death that was getting me. And so, I survived that fifth detox in March. It lasted for so long, into April of 2007, stopped drinking, but didn't stop all drug use. And so I just wanted to stop drinking. And then I just knew in July of that year, I knew. I was looking out the window of my apartment, and I was actually sitting at my desk in my apartment. And I remember very clearly one of those rare moments of clarity that I was going to drink again. This time I was not going to be able to stop. There's no detoxing anymore. That I am going to be an everyday drinker now. I detoxed 5 times at that point. Like, my body, something was telling me the truth of, like, you can't just stop anymore. That's like, your last detox was quite bad, so you'll never be able to do that again. And I knew it was coming. And so I never wanted to drink again. So I decided to kill myself. And I just didn't want to go on. I was like, I've lost everything a young person can lose. And I did not feel young. That I was 21. I was like, I would have welcomed death. Like, really, I was very tired. And you know, the abuse that alcohol puts us to you physically and mentally. I mean, it says in Bill's story, like the mind and body are a marvelous mechanism, for mine endured this torture for 2 more years or something. And I'm like, it is marvelous. I don't know how we lived, but I know a lot of us don't. That's quite horrible. But so I was getting together my plan of how to leave the planet, and I wanted to make it as less gory, as least gory as possible. So, because I know obviously I wasn't going to run away and do it, I was just going to make it happen. And before that, I looked out my window and I thought, you know, I might be okay. Things might be okay if there was a group of young people who I could hang out with who don't drink, but they actually know the game of drinking. Like they know it like me. Like it is their blood and oxygen. And they lost a lot as young people. Like it's over for them, really. They have to restart. And but they have to talk about God too, but they can't be fanatics. And I thought, well, nothing like that exists, so I'm doomed. And it's very odd that that was the thought. I at least attempt to be logical and reasonable. And I to this day it gives me goosebumps because I'm like, that's awesome. Like that is like a divine intervention. And I do have a higher power. I believe in my higher power very much. And I love it deeply. And I believe like I had been raised in a religion. I wasn't religious at that point, but I was still doing kind of my own form of prayer and stuff and like kind of talking to a God. And I just kind of asked for forgiveness for what I was about to do. And my friend Lauren actually texted me. Was this a different Lauren? Maybe. It was. I had two Laurens. One Lauren, we were going to kill our dads. The other Lauren brought me to AA. And so Lauren, who brought me to AA, she said she was in Colemak Clinic, and because we drank very similarly, so she went to an outpatient. And she said they suggest I go to a meeting. I don't want to go alone. You come with me to support me. And I only went because it was Lauren, because we had partied so much together. We were the same. We had gone through bad times and good times, kind of like, you know, an alcohol war buddy thing. And it was only because of her, because the arrogance was going to kill me. I was going to ask nobody for help. I was going to kill myself instead of ask for help, even from a physician. I was 21. There's patient whatever confidentiality, right? I couldn't even handle that. I was like, well, it's going to be on the record somewhere, you know? And I just was so prideful. And like, so alcohol did take me to the gates of insanity and death, to the gates, right? And like, I was saved at the gate because I had made my suicide plan. It was made. All I needed to do was go do it. And so I had to get some things. They were easily obtainable, though. And then do it. And so that's a bad state. If anyone knows anything about mental health, like you should not have a plan ever. And if you do, it's incredibly dangerous and you should get help immediately. And of course, I wasn't gonna, I was like trying to go. So the fact that I went with Lauren is divine intervention because I feel my higher power used me as I was, egotistical, arrogant, dying. And I went to AA in support of her. Because God knew my, I call God God just because it's easy. It's a name. So I don't care what it is, I just call it God. But like God knew, like that is what would get through to me, something egotistical. I can help you, you know, even though I'm totally going to commit suicide within a week, telling nobody, right? Wasn't telling Lauren either. And I went, and my first night in AA, it was amazing. I sat in a room full of people who were laughing. And we're talking about drinking the way that I wanted to hear. Like you guys knew it. Like everyone seemed to be a delinquent. And I was like, yay, you know, like, and no one, like, we're not in like a jail setting. We're not in an asylum together. Like we're in like a free space where we can leave freely, you know? And I was like, this is amazing. Like, I don't know where I am. And it seriously felt like there was a warm light in the room. I can't explain that, you know? I just remember walking in and it being different. It was just a different thing. What is this, like environment, aura? I don't know. And people shared and I related and people got my number afterwards. And I remember driving home, driving Lauren home, then me home. And I called my mom, who I was still close with, but there had been a lot of horrible things that had happened in between, but we were still close. And I said, Mom, Mom, I found it. I found it. And this was like through sobbing. And I was like, I found it. Like it's AA. And she started crying too. She was like, that's great. That's great. Like what happened? Where is it? And I was like, oh, it's in Kensington. And Lauren brought me and I was like, they know about drinking. They know, but they're sober and like they're alive and they're like long-term sober and they're happy. They're not ridiculously sad or wishing they could drink every day. And you know, and I didn't know much about it. So I know that a lot of us here are in pain in some way, but we are able to live life how it is, pain or not, without drinking. Just didn't know that my first day. You know, I just noticed that people were sober and happy and didn't, no one was. Like no one was like just chugging liquor in the corner or something. That'd be fine and say, hey, you know what I mean? But like no one was doing that. And it was just a new scene. She was like, that's great. And that night I did have a white light experience, which I have struggled with sharing that because it is just so when people shared that, I'd be like, sure. You know what I mean? Just because prideful. You know, that's it. I had no excuse other than prideful and a natural cynic. And but I did. I got on my knees and I prayed to my God, and I said, thank you, thank you. This was through tears of complete saved from shipwreck. I didn't want to kill myself anymore. It had left. And I also didn't want to drink. And that to me is unexplainable, you know? And I did see, it's really weird to share, but I did see this like big white light in front of me. It was odd. It was like a bubble with like fuzzy stuff around it. And then like AA was like in it, you know? And it's like, how, you know? And I have been sober since that night to today. And unfortunately, like I did stay sober. My mental health was quite challenging. I didn't seek any therapy for a long time just because like I didn't believe in it. Of course not. You know what I mean? Of course not. I didn't believe in doctors, didn't believe in therapy, just believed in philosophy. You know what I mean? Like my brain was too powerful, you know what I mean? So learned that my brain is very good, but it cannot be the leader of the show. That's what I've learned here. But eventually I got into therapy many years later, and it did help. And what I'm saying that is because I did actually want to drink for quite a long time. Not every day, not a compulsion every day. If you guys have had a compulsion, I did have a few, terrifying because I knew where they led, you know. And I was like, I don't want to go. I don't want to die. I don't really want to. When I thought there was no hope, absolutely. But then I met people that know, so there is hope. You know, I just thought I was alone. That terminal uniqueness, that alcoholic loneliness. You guys have all these words. So I was like, thank you. That's what it is. You said restless, irritable, and discontent. And I was like, since 5 years old, thank you. I know I was an alcoholic at five, but it did describe my state of mind and my feelings. And I was like, thank God people are here, get it. I did struggle with wanting to drink because I wanted to feel better. And good people in AA just kept encouraging me to come back. And they said, this is the long road. This is an internal change, which often doesn't happen immediately. And so, will you just stay? And you just keep telling us your pain and you keep taking actions and keep helping people. And then your pain will just get pushed to the side while you're helping somebody. So you will have moments, days, maybe weeks of feeling okay and maybe even being happy, you know? And that did happen. I really threw myself into, because I had a solid first step and I do today as well, just because I don't know. I've never struggled with it. There was one point at 2 years sober where I was like, maybe it was a phase. And it was because I was struggling so badly with depression. And I was just like, I wanted to drink to get it to go away, you know? And it seemed like helping people wasn't helping me in the way I needed. And my friend told me to read more about alcoholism. And I think it's Fred who talks about he drank alcohol went after he was sober. He drank alcohol again, almost like he changed his mind, like it was ginger ale. My favorite drink is ginger ale. And it just got me. I was like, stop it, Fred. I was just like, me too. You know, I was like, I love ginger ale. And like the rest of more about alcoholism, I couldn't understand in the moment of delusion of like maybe it was a phase. And ever since then, I've never thought that again. So once again, good people in AA who have patience and tolerance and are passing this on for free, have saved my life. You know, whether it was one conversation ever or 20,000 conversations, you know, like me and my sponsor. So everything you guys say to people is important. Everything we do, in my opinion, is important. It may be small, but it is important. It's like the ripple effect that all these organizations and religions have written about for millennia. Like the ripple effect is real. And if we do something good, how awesome is that? It goes everywhere. And especially to our kind, to our alcoholic friends. And so the desire to drink that was on and off for 5 years did cease when I finally sought therapy at 5 years sober. So I can hold on, you know what I mean? Like pain in me, we're tight. I'm just like, I can totally do this. So again, the asset of being driven, I just wildly exploited, you know, and wildly used in the wrong way. Should have been putting it towards like school or something. And I was like, I don't care anymore. Like after high school, I was like, oh my God, everything's so hard in school. I don't care. But so as I've stayed sober, it's been a good ride. It's been 16 years. And ever since that 5 years, I will tell you guys the truth. At 5 years sober, I started to make another plan to kill myself. And so my sponsor, I had switched sponsors at 4 years to the sponsor I still have now. My first one didn't understand mental health. She agreed with me that it wasn't real. Any medication, oh my God, was not real. Like, please don't take it. Like, Tylenol is even. I don't know about Tylenol. So we were very extreme, unfortunately, and I was very vulnerable. But also, once again, I have a part. I also believed that from the get. You know, I just had now a community of people who believe the same thing. So that was stupid. But hopefully they're well. I don't know any of them anymore. But I got converted to that mental health was for real because I was going to kill myself in AA. I had like a million sponsees. I had seven service positions. One of them was overworking that once a week. And I was like, I hate myself. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to stay up all night answering the phones for Trump people. But I did, and it was helpful. And I can't imagine what would have happened to me in those 5 years if I didn't have AA. AA worked, and it makes me love AA even more. Because if AA can keep me sober when I'm planning a suicide, sounds like magic to me. Like, how does that work? It's perfect. I think the program is perfect if I do it. And for me, the crux of that is honesty. I always have to tell someone what's going on, even if it's like a really messed up thought or a really messed up feeling. Or what if I did something super messed up? I just have to say it and then ask for their reply. And then listen. And then if I have further questions, do it. Like ask, listen, and then take suggestions. If I need to write them down, I do because I don't want to forget. But all of it, if I do that, seriously, just that, I found that everything else in this book, the promises, they all come true for me. But I have to be honest. And for me, I have whittled it down because again, this like machine brain that I have, like has to have like a root of where it starts. And I do well though with simple things every day. Like I can't remember the whole big book every day. There's a lot in there. So I think, what is my job today? My job today is to treat everyone kindly. If I don't, make it right, if possible. Treat myself kindly, meaning eat, sleep, go to work on time. Literally makes me feel better. Maybe work at work. Questionable, okay. Still to this day. Don't call my parents when I'm hungry. It's a major rule I imposed. I was 1 year sober. I was like, you can no longer call your father when you're hungry, because I would just tell him about himself, and he didn't need anything from me. You know what I'm saying? It was very unwelcome, and not necessary in the slightest. So I just had to be open to my defects, that they were real and true, and there was something to do about them. I don't have to be ashamed for the rest of my life that I was an idiot towards my dad. Just call him and say, I'm sorry for being rude. You know, would you, can we still get lunch someday? You know what I mean? And he's like, of course. So just like clean it up. I just always think about what my job is. So those are my jobs. And also treating people kindly. Like that's like, I think of it in like a bullet format of how can I do that? There's tons of ways to do it. You know, my husband doesn't like to do the dishes. He does everything else. Let me be very clear. He even cooks. Okay. I do not. So he's the best. Okay. But the dishes, he just doesn't like. And sometimes I leave them in the sink anyway. And I have to think to myself, I literally to this day, I look go by the kitchen. And I'm like, you know, you left that bowl there, Holly. You could put it in the dishwasher. And like, I do it because I have to think, what's my job? My job is to just be kind, just be helpful, even if it's tiny, seemingly tiny, but it literally makes his day better. Why not make his day better? And why not allow, help him avoid annoyance, right? Because annoyance can make us annoyed about other things. It can bleed out, you know, it can really upset people, even if it's little. And so I have sponsees and I love to sponsor and I adore them with all my heart. And I consider it a gift. I consider it out of this world to be able to sponsor. I'd asked God a long time ago if I could help it in any way, because I wanted to be a priest. Not, excuse me, in the Catholic Church, and I wasn't allowed. So I'm a woman, and I asked the Catholic people literally for years. I'd argue as a terrible kid, even if I got straight A's, I was terrible to the teachers. I'd argue about it's perfectly fine if I'm a priest and I will be one. And they were just like, "You're not." Like Rome decides that. I'm like, "Oh," and so I totally forget. I seriously forget what I was talking about. This happens a lot. I'm sorry. I also had a kid, and so my poor brain has been demolished by mommyhood. Guys, I really don't know. Boopity boop boop. Being nice. talking to people.
Sponsors.
Yes, thank you
Sponsoring.
so much. Thank you. There I was. Thank you. Sponsorship. I love it. I can just, I asked God a long time ago, that is, if I could do anything for it to be helpful. I couldn't be a priest, so I didn't know what to do because I was very close-minded. There's lots of things to do for God. And I consider my prayer answered being in AA. I have a specific duty here to help alcoholics try to stay sober. And I know we don't get them sober, but if they come here, we can certainly try to help them stay sober. And so I have been very grateful for this opportunity to be of spiritual assistance, because I did ask for this way before I started drinking. I didn't want to be a nun. I didn't want to be a missionary. I wanted to do something and I didn't know what. And so I consider it God answered. And so I love sponsoring. I consider it part of that answer. And I think they're extraordinary as well. And listening to people go through things and then go on the other side of it is just moving to me. Wasn't always the best sponsor, that's for sure. I've had to read Working with Others a ton and the pamphlet Questions and Answers on Sponsorship to really identify what it is to help somebody in AA, not in a therapeutic setting, not in a like a law setting, even more than a friend setting, even though it does say we offer them friendship and fellowship. I've tasked myself, and I think we've all been tasked with how can I offer that? How can I offer friendship and fellowship? And so I've just tried to stick to working with others pretty closely. And the phrase, we get to know everything about the other person. So we know how we'd like to be treated if the tables were turned. So when it says that we don't speak to somebody from a spiritual high top, there is no hierarchy here. There's no axes to grind, no lectures to be endured. And I'm like, I've endured some lectures in AA, let me say, okay, especially from my first sponsor. I'm sure we've all had some sort of experience like that. But after I switched from her into my new sponsor, new, we've been together 13 years, but she's new. And it just became clear to me that I wasn't reading the big book. I was taking things out of it that I agreed with, and I was not listening to all that it said. It said that you can seek help anywhere. It says that we're actually friends with newcomers. We are not better than them. We're not, it says in that pamphlet, like we actually, that's actually in the story. It says acceptance is the answer. It talks about this doctor dude. He was like, smart and stuff, thought he was smart just like me, and I'm not a doctor, but like he thought he was smart. I relate to that. And he thought that if AA was the best thing that ever happened to him and it wasn't his idea, that he didn't even know what was good for him, then how could he possibly know what was good for anybody else ever? And so he goes on to say, therefore I don't give advice. And I'm just like, that's good too. I like that tip. I can remember smaller things. And in the pamphlet, it talks about we don't give people their inventory. It says it in different words, unless asked. And that always stuck with me too. I was like, this way I was being sponsored was all sorts of jacked up, according to literature that I was reading that is AA approved, right? And I was like, if they're not going by the literature, then what is going on? And so that's why one of the reasons I switched and also kind of had to start over in learning what the big book actually talks about and how to treat others and treat myself. It was also a big like lashing festival in my first like sponsorship family, self-lashing festival. And that's, it says the exact opposite in the big book. And being so logical, I say, as of myself, disregarding English was quite strange, but that's what I did. So I've gotten much better and do consider it a gift. And so that is how I live. I try to be helpful to others, be helpful to myself. Kindness is the same word to me now as helpful. And I leave the big jobs up to God. So big jobs, birth, death, success, failure. A lot of that I still don't agree with because I'm not in control of it. And that's been very hard, but with help, a lot of help and a lot of honesty, and sometimes talking about the same thing on a different day with my sponsor or a friend, just getting the same helpfulness from somebody else has helped me a lot. Like people have died, my animals have died. I almost died in sobriety from giving birth. I'm here now and I am very healthy now, which is awesome due to lots of doctors and it's great. But I had a 7 month recovery. I mean, that made me irate, by the way. The anger came back real strong because I don't want to die. And I was like, I'm either taking myself out or God's taking me. I don't go out medically, still arrogant to this day. You know what I mean? But like, I just, in a funny way, I try not to be arrogant for real, but in a funny way, I just want to live forever. That's all I want. And AA has given that to me because I did not want to live forever. I wanted to die. And now I want to live forever. And almost dying made me irate. I consider that a gift. Now, I was irate. I'm not anymore. But I have just had to rely on a higher power a lot. And the reason, honestly, I've just discovered this recently, the reason I don't talk about a higher power too much in depth is because one, it's so subjective. But two, I find my higher power in all of the actions. And then the experience just happens within me. And so I find it hard to articulate what happens. All I know is I have a job and God has a job every day. I'm not to focus on God's job because I don't know, I don't understand any of that. It's, I can't even talk about it. I don't know what the words I said, birth, death, success, failure. I just pray that everyone gets the help they need, that I get the help I need. Let me be helpful. Thank you. Like, I don't know. So I'm, it's alleviated my mind of a massive burden of like, why did things happen? Why is this happening? Why did my sponsee die? Why did she get this? That's maddening. And it alleviates me from that because I'm just like, that is God's job. And you do not need to understand. You're allowed to turn away and focus on your job. And so I've made it really important for myself to ask myself every day, what's our job? Who do we have to call back? Who do we have to call? Like, do we need to make food? Is there laundry? If there's a big project at work, like, let's just get it done. Like, all the regular things. I just consider it my job. And so it's given me a better mindset to live in a productive way. While life can be terrible or wonderful, and I don't understand why, that question of why, I just try to give over. So that's why I don't talk about it a lot, because if I do my job, I find peace. If I don't do my job, I am disturbed. And that's, it's actually just turned out that simple for me. And part of my job is being honest. I always think about bringing it back to that. Because if I'm not honest, I can help, you know, you can't transmit something you have. Help as many people I can, be as good as work as I at work as I can, but I'll drink again. You know, the basis for me is honesty and doing my job, you know. So thank you guys so much for listening, and thank you, let me share.